Okay, the first and obvious thing to say is that the fluctuations on Sunday morning attendance are inevitable, and the way in which you deal with that is if you can find the time to try and follow up what we do. This is the last of six sessions. I think what we're going to try and do, we've got this in mind, is that we're going to try and provide a one-page summary of the talks, because we know everybody doesn't enjoy listening to audio, but for those who do, we've got to do everything to help you keep up, and we hope you do everything you can to get to us, even if you wake up a bit late. We're glad when you get here anyway. The series we've been dealing with was called Platform 9 3/4, which is the place where you break through from the world of muggles to the world of wizards. If you don't get that, I just couldn't bear the thought of showing the video again, the through the wall video. Yeah, gradually sinking into people that I would actually give a credit to the website. I think it's probably Absolute Madness or something like that. I have a number of blogs I follow with titles like that, which provide me with much of my resource for this these sessions. So. The world, one of the great things, one of the very useful things about the Harry Potter stories is that it makes it easy for us to talk in picture language, in metaphors, about the difference between two worlds. There are a number of points in the story, aren't there, where he turns round the corner and finds himself in the world of wizards, you know, with those really scary shops, or shops that are supposed to be scary and that kind of thing. And he comes out into the ordinary world of muggles. And in fact, you're left realising or thinking that the muggle world is the world that's unreal and the world that's hidden is the real world. And isn't that true? It's what Jesus was saying and it's what the book of Revelation's about. And it's something that we need to get deep into our consciousness. And that's really where I'm focusing today as I finish off these sessions. We've been talking about noticing God, attending to God, and responding to God. I was reading about a piece of research, forget where it came from. Yes, I can remember now. It was a guy called Greeley, who did some research early on in the 70s. And he found that, would you believe, that people who had mystical experiences and could say that they felt that they had met God often did nothing about it. They noticed God, and even if they attended to God, they didn't respond to him. And that's the same lesson we learn from miracles as well, because when miracles happen, we always think that miracles are fundamentally convincing, and that is what is going to convince the world. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. And I remember once when I was at school, must have been the sixth form, that I'd read this booklet which had really impacted me, because it told a story of how somebody had had a kidney removed and how that kidney grew back. And they'd actually reproduce the plates, the x-ray plates, to show how it had happened. And the friend I was talking to just shrugged. He said, okay, I'm still not interested. Yeah, didn't argue about the facts, still not interested. I remember one night when I was a first-year student, and the guy I was sharing digs with had just come back for it. He was chairman of the German Society. He was wonderfully cool, wore beads and a kaftan at the time, which meant that you were cool. And we went through this discussion. He was so sophisticated and talking about this and that. And I was just a new kid on the block. But we went through stage by stage. And I was convinced that he would be convinced. But during the course of 2 hours conversation, he went from saying, "I can't believe," to saying, "I won't believe." So, noticing God is important. Responding to him is even more important. Now, I hope this won't offend any of you. But I'm going to show you a video. And what I'd like you to look at is there are some people here who are noticing, attending, responding. Try and get in your mind where those things are, and afterwards talk to one another about where that was happening. I've travelled on the New York subway quite a lot, but I've never seen anybody pointing out the window at one of those signs. I've never noticed it. Noticing, attending, responding. What was going on there? Go on, talk to one another about it just for a moment. Yeah. I assume that they have a video camera by the, or at least they're told there's a video camera by the board, and is, I suppose it's a good way of making sure that the conductor hasn't got off the train at the previous station. Tell us how you, what was the evidence of people noticing? Yeah, I would have anchored that as a response. Yeah. You know, the smile was the response. Yeah.
I think they noticed it when they went to point and they saw.
Yeah, the looking down. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's when you notice something, isn't it? You're there. We actually use this very important word. I tell you how important it is to me. I'm spending 6 years studying it, and that's the word encounter. An encounter. We talk about an encounter with God. And an encounter with God always has the element of surprise. You know, where you go, oh, there's God. It may have happened for you during the meeting this morning. It sort of did for me, because I'm sitting there thinking about whether I need to print out our travel insurance papers. I'm such an unspiritual person. But I'm thinking about that and wondering where Wendy is. I know where she was, but I was wondering whether she was in the meeting or not. And then I'm going through all this stuff, and then suddenly, oh. And what happened for me, and it often happens this way, I catch the rhythm of something. And the rhythm starts to speak to me of the presence of God. And there was a rhythm of God for me there in the music this morning. So you noticed something. And then how did you know they were attending? Where was the evidence of attending? Paying attention. Did you... Sorry? Somebody said something then? Yeah.
Just noticing, like there's a lady that looked a bit sad-faced and not very amused.
Yeah.
We found the attending one quite difficult.
For me, where the attending is, and you play this through a few times, as I have, there's a point at which people are evidently reading. They're trying to work out. You know, it's not just somebody standing. They've noticed somebody standing there with a piece of paper. They read it. They attend to it, and then they realise who it's directed to. Yeah? So there's that awakening. And even with that miserable lady, yeah, who is... she actually looked English, didn't she? Sort of... she was so miserable. you could see that a little shake of her head, and then the half smile response. So it was all it all tangles up, isn't it? And I suppose one of the biggest points with this, that we notice, we attend, we respond in real life. Those things get packed down into very tiny moments, and it's difficult to distinguish one bit from another. And sometimes that's the case in terms of noticing God and responding to him. But there is something fundamental about this, that if we notice God, right, there needs to be a response. Look at this, it says come. Those two, I suppose they're sort of key soundbite verses. They're both short enough to go on Twitter. Do you know, you heard about the Pope and his Latin twittering? He tweets in Latin, apparently, if you want, you've got an option there. I never did like... No, but he's got a Latin thing. I rather fancy doing that, so a chance to learn Latin on the way through working out. People were trying to translate it as they went on the radio this morning. But come near to God and he will come near to you. It's simple, isn't it? Oh, God isn't coming near to me. I'm not conscious of God. Well, have you been coming to God? Have you been endeavouring to focus? Because it pushes it in Hebrews. And these references will be up there, up somewhere for you. I've sent them to David, and after that happens, I don't really know what happens next, but something happens with them. Anyone who comes to God must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. So it's not just coming, right, here I am, God, where are you? Okay, there's a dimension of seeking. Sometimes God's there before we answer. Sometimes we have to push it and push it and push it. Even David talked about his prayer and described it's a horrible image actually, but it's a really good image. Talked about the heavens being like brass. Brass was the hardest thing these guys knew, you know. So he'd got the idea of it being like a shiny bowl, and God was on the other side and there was no way of getting through. And sometimes life can be like that. So I don't know what it means for you to earnestly seek God. Talk about it to one another. What might it mean for you to be earnestly seeking? I'm going to run out of time if I keep on asking you to talk to one another, but just 1 minute on this one. Okay, guys, you've talked about being earnest. The word isn't often used in the Bible, but I've just thought of a connection that I hadn't thought of. What's the connection of earnestness to Elijah? Come on, those of you who've been around for a while must be able to quote this verse. James 5:17. Elijah was a human being, even as we are. We know that because he got into really bad depression, didn't he, at one particular juncture. He prayed earnestly that it would not rain, and it did not rain on the land for 3.5 years. The person who comes to God must believe that he exists and is a rewarder of those who earnestly seek him. Now, what was the song that in that BMW advert that we were playing at the beginning? Yeah, it was Swing Low Sweet Chariot. And what's the connection there between Swing Low Sweet Chariot and Elijah?
He ran faster than one.
He ran faster than one?
Did he get taken up in a chariot?
He got taken up in a fiery chariot. Which is where... Pardon?
It swung low.
It came down. And, yeah. It's really interesting, isn't it? We hear the song, which is based on a Bible story. And even those of us who are motivated to do so don't make the connection. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. So where was home?
Heaven.
Yeah. If you get there before I do, coming for to carry me home, tell all my friends I'm coming too. Yeah, we need to do some more work on this, you know. In fact, we don't often think about heaven, do we? And that's where my punchline is this morning, because the story of Elijah, we've gone through with these things. And interestingly, if you look in James, you get another angle on this rain, Because the Lord said to him, it's not going to rain. And Elijah prayed that it would not rain. I don't know whether the way it happened was this, that Elijah had one of those intuitions. I think the Lord is saying to me that it's not going to rain for 3 years. And being a prophet, okay, one of the notions about prophets are people are always willing to put it out there. And it's not surprising that sometimes prophets get it a bit wrong, because you have to have a lot of nerve to be a prophet. And he put it out there, perhaps, and went and told King Ahab, well, you've been, you know, you're in such a mess, this country is just not really following God, it's not going to rain for 3 years, or 3.5 years. And then he went away, and it said that he prayed earnestly that it wouldn't rain for 3 years. And sometimes, you know, when we declare something, the result of it is that we have to pray into it so that it comes about. Okay, I don't want to spend too much time on that. But of course, what happened right at the end of Elijah's life, if you get to 2 Kings chapter 2, is this really strange story, as strange can be, really weird, of this mystical vehicle came and took him off to heaven, leaving Elisha with his cloak. Brilliant story, well worth reading. So, I'm going to play Swing Low, Sweet Chariot again in another setting, which may help you to grab hold of it. And while we're playing it, have a think and talk about why on earth you think that being almost exceptional in never dying, Elijah went off to heaven in a chariot. I'll be interested to think, to find out what you say. You've got 3 minutes on this, I think. Or until I get fed up with the song. So here's the question. Why was it, of all people, that this happened to Elijah? And was it just a coincidence that it was Elijah? And God could have done that with anybody. That's the question. I've had enough of that. You can, the link will be on Facebook or on the website, wherever these things go. Go on. Who's got an answer? Why? Andy seemed to have an answer.
The only thing I can think of is he just seems to be special.
Oh, yeah, that's... Okay. Yeah,
everybody else.
Yeah, we all got that far. Any idea about how he's different to everybody else?
No, I haven't got a clue.
You see, this is why there's a certain prophetic dimension to Andy. He puts it out there. He says it when all of you are thinking, yeah, well... That's it. Anybody else add to what Andy said?
He was followed by Elisha. He did twice as much as Elijah did. He didn't go up to heaven.
No, he didn't go up to heaven. But, of course, he died, but he still carried on working afterwards. Can you remember what happened? Fantastic story, really spooky story, sort of zombie story. Okay, so what happens, Elisha is buried, and... somebody gets killed, soldier gets killed, and his friends are running away from the battlefield carrying their dead comrade, right? They chuck him in a cave, and it happens to be the cave where Elisha is buried, and they end up running even faster because this dead bloke touches the bones of Elijah, is immediately brought back to life again, and comes tearing after them. Just imagine that. You chuck a dead guy away. Yep. That's why you tie people's shoelaces together in case they come back as a zombie, isn't it? when you bury them. But that's thin places. Meanwhile, back at the ranch. But yeah, Elisha, strange things happening, that there was power still going on. And of course, Elijah is one of those two people who appear at the transfiguration of Jesus. Who was the other one?
Moses.
And of course Moses did die, but nobody knew where his grave was, because he went up into a mountain to God and he died there. And actually, you wonder whether Moses died he died when he did, because it was a punishment, because God told him that because he got angry, right, the standards some of these guys had to live to, but because he got angry, he wouldn't see the promised land, right? And God had given him really strange instructions. Once God had said to him, strike the rock and water will come out of it. The next time, God said to him, speak to the rock and water will come out of it. And he was so cross with the people about their complaining, because they were complaining that they didn't want to go to the promised land. They would rather go back to Egypt. In fact, Egypt sounded pretty much like a chip shop, really, because they wanted to go back to Egypt because they could get gherkins, right? They wanted cucumbers, they wanted garlic. But yeah, and they said, it's all very well for you to give us quails and manna. You're looking at me as though I'm not telling you what's in the Bible. At least I think this is in the Bible. No, I'm sure it is, yeah. And they say, oh, well, first of all, they complain because they only had bread. Well, they complained because they were hungry. Then they complained because they only had manna, which was strange stuff, because the word manna means, what is it? Okay, it was so strange. It was called, what is it? Then they complained they only had quails and they didn't have any gherkins or garlic to go with it. Right, so they were pretty bad. They were almost as bad as me as far as my food's concerned. Right? You know, they got nothing to put on it. Where's the ketchup? Now, can you imagine in the middle of the desert, when God had provided food for you, turning round to the person who administered that to you and prayed it through and brought it and listened to your complaints and saying, I want ketchup on this. So it's hardly surprising that Moses struck the rock. I'd have poked it in somebody's eye. I swear I would. But God said to him, you know, because of that, you're not going into the promised land. Another weird thing that we can't understand, because God accepts us just as we are. But some people were called to live at a real high level. Anyway, see, this is the problem, isn't it? When you start to think about these things, they take you on and on and on, as you wonder about the bigness and strangeness of God and the ways he deals with people. But of course, one of the reasons why we particularly use the 9 3/4 thing was the idea of a thin place, a place where you break through between this world and the next. And it's very common in mystical circles within the Catholic tradition and elsewhere that people will talk about thin places. And Andy, you've spoken on this, I think, at some stage back in the past, haven't you? Yeah. And did you use sandpaper?
Yeah.
Because Andy talked about the fact that by praying, it's like sanding down what is in any case a thin wall, and we gradually become closer and closer. And I reckon that the only explanation here is that Elijah in his era was an exceptional guy, and he got closer and closer and closer to God, so he knew what God was thinking. But even then he had a blip, you know, and James almost seems relieved that he was somebody like we are, you know, who could mess it up and go and hide under a tree and say, I want to die. Yeah? But he got close to God. And what noticing God is about fundamentally is coming to a realization that the gap between here and there is very small indeed. And sometimes there breaks through into here. It's where we understand that heaven isn't a place there, it's a place on earth that's continuing alongside of where we are. And there's a breaking through that makes a difference. How? What's the next slide? I didn't put enough information down there. Yeah, we talked about some of the ways, didn't we, that we notice God. We notice God in miracles. And frankly, you have to be a real plonker not to notice God when a miracle happens. Yeah? Think of that text this morning. The hospital said to Julie Ross that David's cancer has gone. And yet, I'm not even sure, actually, that some of us noticed that that might just have been an example of God doing a miracle. And for anybody to respond, I counted the number of seconds it took, and it was quite a lot. I knew because I'd had an early warning. I was talking to Andy on the phone when the text from David came through, so I could see it there, and I was thinking that I must phone David to find out more. And we haven't found out more because Julie's got a tummy upset this week, so that's why she's not here. But miracles, yeah, it's easy to notice God there. Signs, we talked about that last week with that poor old servant who had to keep traipsing up to look at the horizon and then coming back again and going back and looking again. And sometimes we see signs. Sometimes we don't notice the sign. That was part of that New York subway experiment, wasn't it? It took a little while to notice the sign and to notice its significance. There are thoughts and feelings. We've said that God uses our mind to speak to us. Even with Daniel, God spoke to him in his mind. And it's a reasonable problem to say, well, am I just thinking this or is it God? Okay? Don't make it the assumption that it's always your mind and you just thinking, but equally don't make the assumption it's always God as well. That way madness lies. Trying to find a way forward where you work it out. And you know what? Sometimes you will get it wrong. But you have to take a punt sometimes on it being God rather than just you thinking. Then there are words and voices. I've never had voices. I think I'd be quite frightened if I felt God spoke to me in an audible voice, but I'd like it to happen one day. I've never seen angels. I know people who have. I know people who have seen angels that for them are so real that as the angel flew towards the window of the room they were in, they ducked because they expected the glass to smash. Now that's quite something, I guess, and that's fine. If I see an angel, I'll probably never stop talking about it, or perhaps I'll be too scared to mention it to anybody because I don't want to be considered to be a little odd, or more odd than I. That was not good. That was not kind. But you know, during the week, last Sunday was not my best Sunday. I spoke on Sunday morning, I was all over the place, I know about that. We had a prayer meeting in the evening. Prayer meeting was like wading through porridge, at least I felt it was. And afterwards I was feeling quite miserable. It was not a good day. You know, I often have bad days. I had a bad day yesterday. I don't often clean my car. On Friday evening I cleaned my car. Thought it would be nice to leave it without any salt and so on, having been driving on the motorway with it. And Nathan and I were driving to Melksham yesterday morning, and I thought the guy was going to throw up because I drove through standing water. For the first time this winter I drove through standing water that was exceedingly muddy and completely covered the car. Of course, he'd been arguing the toss about whether it was a good idea for me to pay to get it cleaned or whether I should have paid him to have cleaned my car. In the first place, I said it was cheaper and caused a lot less mess if I paid to have it done at the garage. So, but, you know, that's a sort of bad day, but I don't get too bothered about that. I was grumbling for much of the day and hoping it would rain really hard to wash the mud off. But last Sunday was not a good day. And I found myself looking at the scripture about 9:30, 10:00, and there was this verse in there that spoke to me. It really did. I've read it many, many times. And it said, God does not take pleasure in the strength of a horse or in the stamina of a warrior, but his heart is towards those who fear him. Now, fear, of course, means take him seriously. And I thought, thank you, God, because I don't think I've done very well today, but you know that I am trying to take you seriously. And that's made a good week for me, because it's made the point that God really isn't, at the end of the day, interested in my performance. What he's interested in is whether I ever go and try to do what he wants with his power. Yeah? I know there's more to it than that, but that for me is how word comes. Then there's mystical events as well. There are people, mystical events only happen very rarely in our lives. I can think of perhaps a couple of things like that. But what I'm going to do now is I'm going to give you a paper that I'd like you to take away with you. I'm sorry about the printing on this. We were going to do it in the session, but inevitably we run out of time. And many of you would probably not want you to do it in public anyway. Here's the paper. Everybody can do this, particularly people from Teens Girls Group. In fact, when you go to Bath next Saturday or the Saturday after, perhaps you can talk about this a bit. Anybody need any more? Yeah, okay. Some more here. Any more? Okay. Get one with some writing on it.
Yeah.
The prophetic anointing. Shouldn't have shaken the paper so hard. So, okay. Look, this is what I want you to do. Now, this is really serious instruction. Excuse me. Ladies first, ladies last, whatever. Yeah. Here's the instruction. I've got a bit more that I want to do, so I've got to go fast on this. Look, what I want you to do is, if you are over 50, here's the question. I want you to look at this in the last 6 months. If you're over 50, look at it in the last 6 months. Right? If you're between 30 and 50, look at it over the last year. Okay? If you're under 30, look at it in the whole of your life. Okay? So if you're over 50, look at it for 6 months. If you're between 30 and 50, look at it over a whole year. If you're under 30 or have only been a Christian for about a year, okay, around about that sort of time, if you're just on your journey at the moment, which includes you but not her, right? Okay. Then take it at any time in your life. Okay? And I'll explain why as I finish off. I think you'll get the point. You see, those of you who are over 50 should have learned by now to notice God. Yeah? That's what maturity is. Maturity is not getting older. You just get old and immature if you don't move on in God. Those of you who have been Christians for a while, the test is really whether we're continuing to know God, to be close to him. But have a go at it. Nobody's going to ask you for this, but it might actually be a good test to see whether the things we're talking about are really sticking in. So, where are we now? Of course, part of the problem is that we don't recognise things because too much is happening. We might have to finish without my last point this morning, but let's have a go at this. Watch this, attend to this, and answer the questions. We've done lots of those over the months, haven't we, Bob, who have been studying this area. If we're going to notice God, we have to give ourselves time. We have to find a way, a space. And some of us are really bad at packing all sorts of things in. I know that when the kids have gone to bed at night, you may feel so tired you just want to switch the telly on. But give yourself 5 minutes. Okay? Record the programme. Give yourself some space to see where God's been in your day and get into practice there. Now, I'm going to do this without comment, but without too much comment anyway. We've been talking about noticing God. We've been talking about attending to God. We've been talking about responding to God. That's what we've been talking about for the past 3 months in that series. For a while now, I've finished on that subject. Famous last words, probably, because I might get stirred in it and come back to it. While we're away, I've got a chunk of paper. Well, it's on my Kindle. I hope it's got to my Kindle. That I want to read in preparation for what we're going to do next alongside Missional Essentials. But here's a point. Here's what I wanted to say to you. It's a choice. We do choose to notice God. And while God may have broken into your life the first time in a surprising way, those who come to God must believe that he is and is a rewarder of those who diligently and consistently seek him.
Now, I don't think that him.
I just want to, let me just go back to this. In 1949, there was a guy who was a really popular entertainer in the California, in Los Angeles area. He was well known as a drunk. He called himself the first of the juvenile delinquents. It was a long time ago. His name was Stuart Hamblin. He came to a Billy Graham crusade when he went to Los Angeles in 1949, which was when Billy Graham started up, and he came to faith. It was quite remarkable because at that particular time, he decided he was not going to have anything to do with beer commercials because beer was bad for him and it was a real problem. He lost his job, lost his TV series, you know, about sponsorship and in America. But Billy Graham in 1963 said that the conversion of Stuart Hamblin was the turning point in the Billy Graham Crusades, because after that, so many people knew Stuart Hamblin that they came along. In fact, he was so well known that apparently, and this is a story that Hamblin always told, is that on one occasion, John Wayne was trying to get him to have a drink subsequently. How about that for name dropping? John Wayne was trying to get him to have a drink, and Hamblin gave his testimony and said to him, it's no secret what God can do. And Wayne said to him, you ought to write a song about that, because he was a songwriter, and he did. It became a song that's gone all the way around the world called It's No Secret. But this guy wrote another song, and I've got to try and get back to this so that you can hear him talking about it.
But I don't think that anyone ever got the true meaning that I intended the song to convey. You see, I wrote it to be a sad song. When I made the first recording, I did it that way. But then the recording industry said, oh, Stuart, you're all wrong. To be a hit, it's got to have a real bounce to it. Well, not long ago, I was up in our attic and happened to run across that first old tape recording that I made. Perhaps if you listen to it, you get the true meaning that I wanted the song to have. You see, most people thought the song was just about a poor, lonely prospector, his half-dead dog that had cashed in their blue chips way up high in the Sierra Mountains during a wild storm. But that wasn't it at all. The song was about two houses. The house that's made of mud, brick, and wood, and stone that a man builds. And the other house, the mortal house. The house that the maker of men has loaned to the man for such a short, short time.
Not many of you will be old enough to know the first time this song came out, and I think was a hit seven times. But some of you are old enough to know. Yeah. Why that song? Swing Low Sweet Chariot, this old house, there's a very small gap between us and the next stage. Why did I want to pick on people over 50 this morning? Right? It seems to me strange that we should ever think of winding down. The prospect of relatively, I can understand a 20-year-old living for today, living for comfort. But when you reach the venerable age that I've reached, it gets relatively closer to the fact that the possibility that one day I'm going to step over that barrier and rather that world intruding on this. I'll be caught up with that world permanently. And I rather like the idea of being so busy getting ready for that world that you can't have too much preoccupation with this. And I think that, for me, is the story of Elijah. And what really makes sense and what's important. And I do think that if we decide what's most important in our lives, we're more likely to notice God. Pray very quickly. Father, we're here because we want to follow Jesus more closely in more areas of our lives. And I pray that your Holy Spirit will settle on us and help us to notice you, to attend to you, and to respond to you. Amen. If you need prayer, make sure you come forward and somebody will pray with you.